Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If you look at the combination of the mistakes I made and the correct decisions I made, I think if I made the same balance of those as President of the United States, the country would be in great shape.
Rudy Giuliani the other day trying to minimize his responsibility for the failings of his corrections and police commissioner, Bernard Kerik. Last week's 16-count federal indictment of Kerik alleges that he designed an ambitious scheme to enrich himself by selling his influence while in office. Also that he failed to pay taxes on the proceeds and then tried to cover it all up. Kerik maintains he is innocent and vows to fight the multiple charges in court, and he may have reason for being optimistic. Last year, in a related state case brought by Bronx District Attorney Robert Johnson, Kerik only had to plead guilty to two misdemeanors and pay a $200,000 fine, no jail time. But with us now for some context is the former New Jersey Attorney General Peter Harvey, who also served as an assistant U.S. attorney. He is now in private practice here in New York and also has some experience in this matter. Good morning, and thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Harvey. Do people still call you General?
Well, I try to discourage it, but some still do.
So, first, General, how did it come to be that the former New York City police commissioner popped up on the radar of the New Jersey Attorney General?
Well, there were two companies, Interstate Industrial Corporation and Interstate Drywall Corporation, both of which applied for a license to provide services to the casino industry in the state of New Jersey. Now, the Division of Gaming Enforcement is in the Attorney General's office, and the division has the responsibility really in three areas. One, prosecuting crimes that occur in the casino. Believe it or not, some people actually try to rob casinos or commit crimes on the casino floor. Second is to do background investigations on persons who actually work in the casinos, as well as vendors who wish to provide services to the casinos, everything from construction services to linen and cleaning and the like. And then third, of course, is to provide financial stability reviews for casinos seeking a license or renewing their license. Interstate Industrial Corporation and Interstate Drywall Corporation came to the attention of the Division of Gaming Enforcement because they were seeking a non-gaming casino service license. And so they had to undergo a background check, and as part of that background check, they have the burden of proving that they are persons of good character and that they deserve a license. As a result of the investigation by our office, we discovered some unusual relationships between both companies and various alleged members and some admitted members of organized crime.
Where did Kerik come into that?
Kerik came into it because some of these members, during the course of an indictment and a trial in Brooklyn, began to talk about their relationship with Interstate. The division's further investigation discovered that Interstate had a long association with at the time, Commissioner Kerik, that included employing his brother to work for an Interstate company, as well as certain construction services that Interstate caused to have caused to be done on an apartment in the Bronx that Mr. Kerik owned. And when Interstate was asked about various statements that persons had made under oath about their connections with Mr. Kerik, Interstate could not provide a reason why these persons would, against their own interests, purposely fabricate information against Interstate. So that's kind of how we got involved in the investigation.
It's so interesting because it really was not a criminal investigation you were conducting per se. It was kind of a licensing or regulatory routine matter for a company that wanted to do business with casinos.
That's correct.
And yet all this stuff popped up as you started to check them out. I hope everybody's as well protected as these casinos are in terms of getting their contractors checked out. But then what did you finally conclude about Bernard Kerik?
Well, we finally concluded, our conclusions were really directed towards Interstate. And what we said was Interstate, the two Interstate companies, were engaged in such suspicious activities that we did not believe they deserved to be licensed by the Casino Control Commission. We presented our findings to the Casino Control Commission that itself conducted a hearing. The Casino Control Commission disagreed with our office and issued Interstate a non-gaming casino service industry license in July of 2004. We challenged that license issuance.
Right. So let me just read a little, because I have your formal complaint from 2005
yes.
in front of me, and I'm just going to read a little of the text from this, and then you can give us some context, okay?
Sure.
So this is under your count number 2, lack of good character, and again, though it's aimed at these contractors, as you say, part of what it says is Carrick was appointed by Mayor Rudolph Giuliani as commissioner of the New York City Department of Corrections in 1998 and police commissioner in 2000. Ray, is that one of the principals in Interstate?
That's correct. That's Lawrence Ray. He was a former Interstate employee, and he is the person who introduced the DiTomasos, Frank and Peter, who owned Interstate, to Bernard Carrick.
So you wrote, Ray had a long-standing relationship with Carrick and served as best man at Carrick's wedding in November 98. Between 98 and 2000, Ray gave Carrick thousands of dollars in gifts for Carrick's wedding expenses and Carrick's purchase of personal property and or payment of debts. During 98, Interstate was under active regulatory investigation by both the division in New Jersey and the Trade Waste Commission. Then Ray, who had a previous relationship with DiTomaso, advised DiTomaso that Ray had a background in law enforcement and therefore could assist Interstate with its regulatory investigations, which I guess meant that he had contacts with Carrick, among others. And sure enough, your next paragraph says, in 1998, Ray introduced DiTomaso to Carrick, telling DiTomaso that maybe he, Carrick, can help us. And then Carrick recommended Ray for employment by Interstate, calling Ray a top-shelf guy and telling DiTomaso, Larry, Lawrence Ray, 100%. So subsequent to Carrick's recommendation, Frank DiTomaso hired Ray for Interstate. Now, none of that is a crime, is it?
No. So far, so good. It may raise questions if Mr. Carrick at the time was under some type of restrictions. Some of these gifts and payments with respect to his wedding may be an issue. But so far, none of that is a crime.
But then later on, according to documents and testimony obtained by the division, Tim Woods, a principal of Woods Restoration, was brought into the Carrick project by DiTomaso. Based on interactions with DiTomaso as well as a prior history of similar arrangements, the understanding was that any costs incurred by Woods Restoration on the project, which were not paid for by Carrick, which would be reimbursed by Interstate. Now it starts to get a little questionable, right?
This is correct, because now Woods, our investigation revealed that Tim Woods, who was a principal of Woods Restoration, was brought in to perform reconstruction of Mr. Carrick's apartment in the Bronx. And Mr. Carrick, according to the testimony that we had acquired, was unable to pay for the renovations to the apartment or apartments that he was acquiring in the Bronx. And so he was seeking a way, as far as we could tell, to have those renovations done at a low cost or at no cost.
And as you allege, the repairs and renovation of Carrick's New Bronx apartment had a true cost in excess of $200,000. Carrick paid Woods Restoration only $17,800 toward the true cost of said repairs and restoration. So was it all of this that wound up leading to the indictment of Carrick in the Bronx? Did you, as a matter of this regulatory function that you were performing as New Jersey Attorney General, refer this as a potential criminal matter to the state of New York?
No, we actually went through our proceedings. Some of these proceedings are public, and certainly the proceedings before the Casino Control Commission are public. We suspect that New York authorities became aware of the proceedings that we were conducting in New Jersey, because remember, the other side of this Tim Woods transaction was not that Woods was going to absorb the balance. The work cost $200,000, and Mr. Carrick, as we believe, paid $17,800. The balance, close to 100 close to nearly $180,000, was going to be paid for by Interstate. They were going to make up the difference, and they were not going to of course, reveal that they were making up the difference to anyone. We presented this information to the Casino Control Commission. There was a hearing. Casino Control Commission, at a public hearing, accepted the recommendation of its own hearing officer and ultimately granted both Interstate companies a casino service license, which we challenged before the appellate division of the Superior Court. We thought that the connections between Interstate and organized crime figures, or the language in New Jersey as career criminals, was so compelling that we thought that the Casino Control Commission had simply made an error, and we asked them to change their mind. They didn't, and we asked the appellate court to help the Casino Control Commission see the case from our perspective. Subsequent to our argument before the appellate division, the DiTomasos were indicted in the Bronx for perjury, and the perjury charges related, as we could tell them, related directly to statements that they made denying any knowledge or participation in the renovation work in the Bronx apartment of Mr. Carrick. And, of course, that information had been unearthed by our office in the course of our licensing investigation.
Right. My guest for another few minutes on WNYC is the former New Jersey State Attorney General, Peter Harvey, giving us some background into what is now a new federal indictment against former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick, with, of course, some potential ramifications for Rudy Giuliani's presidential campaign. And, Mr. Harvey, from your work on the case in New Jersey in and around 2005, what conclusions can you draw, if any, about what Rudy Giuliani may have knew or didn't know about the ethics or even criminality of his corrections and police commissioner at that time?
Well, we didn't reach any conclusions because our singular focus was on the two Interstate companies and their conduct in associating with career criminals and, of course, their conduct in reimbursing the company for the work that was being done on Mr. Carrick's apartment. So our focus was not Mr. Giuliani at all. And in fact, I'm not even sure we gave him much thought.
The general thought among people in law enforcement, tell me if you agree, is that Carrick got off with basically a slap on the wrist in the Bronx with this $200,000 fine and pleading out only to two misdemeanors. Did it surprise you, and do you think he's going to have a much harder time at the federal level now?
I wasn't surprised that he reached a plea agreement with the Bronx. We thought the Bronx district attorney had a pretty good case against him, in part based upon a lot of the work that we had done, but also their own work. They put the Interstate principals, Frank and Peter DiTomaso, in the grand jury and asked him questions, and they obtained evidence based upon those questions. So I wasn't necessarily surprised that a plea was entered. Let me put it to you this way. I think the feds are going to be less accommodating, particularly since there already has been a plea to two misdemeanors in the Bronx. My guess is that they're going to accept nothing less than a felony, and my guess would be that they would almost insist upon some jail time.
Is there some double jeopardy here, that he's being tried again at the federal level for things he already pled to at the state level, or are there new charges here?
Well, there are some new charges, but keep in mind that the state government and the federal government are separate sovereigns. What that means is they are separate jurisdictions. So, for example, if you rob a bank in New York City, the state of New York can prosecute you, in this case the Manhattan district attorney or one of the district attorneys can prosecute you for bank robbery under state laws. The federal government can prosecute you for bank robbery under federal laws. So it's not a double jeopardy situation. while the conduct may violate separate laws and it may appear that he's being prosecuted for the same thing twice, he actually isn't. On the state level, he was prosecuted for state charges. On the federal level, he will be prosecuted for federal charges relating to some of the same conduct. But remember, the feds have the ability to charge mail fraud and wire fraud, which states cannot charge because the wire or the telephones are instrumentalities of interstate commerce. Mail service is peculiarly a federal agency, the U.S. Postal Service. So, no, it does not give rise to double jeopardy concerns.
Former New Jersey Attorney General Peter Harvey, who also served as an assistant U.S. attorney, thanks a lot for that context. Really informative. Appreciate it a lot.
Thank you so much for your time.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. In a minute, we'll get political analysis from Ron Brownstein on whether Kerik's problems might rub off on Rudy Giuliani. And we'll talk about the Democratic race as well, with the polls closing between Obama and Clinton. Stay with us.